I don't know. That's,
yeah.
I kept going over, well, they had names, you know, because I do it real intensively first and then pick it up and actually try and see it. So it's, I'm doing all the details and I don't see anything with the details. But that's how you have to set it up to teach a class. You have to get down to those details. And then you try and broaden it up to the big picture, and I'm going, oh my! I thought he just said he was this, and now he's this, and I don't get it. I can understand, not especially if you're a young believer, not being happy with what God is doing and get kind of angry at him. But I don't know how you carry that on enough to change your life radically towards. We're all selfish. I'm not saying that. And I'm not saying that we don't want to do our own thing. But the idea of a king going from godly to when he didn't get his own way, throwing a hissy fit and going the other way, that just seems to me, maybe it's because I don't totally understand male kind of pride. I do understand pride, and we all have pride. But male pride seems to be different than female pride. And I just kind of watch that thinking, you don't get how big he is. You get how big he is. You know, like maybe he actually knew what he was saying. You know, I don't understand this. So any of those kinds of things hit you guys as you're studying?
Oh, yeah. Again and again, we look at it and go, oh. Yeah. But the Lord, what comes through to me also is the Lord's compassion and his mercy, that they do this again and again, and the Lord's not willing for his name to die out, and he keeps having compassion, just like he did in the book of Judges. He keeps rescuing them, sending a deliverer, and sometimes we know who that is, and sometimes we don't. And, yeah,
sometimes I think the kings do it out of weakness. You know, Ahab was so wicked, mm-hmm. but it was because of Jezebel. Mm-hmm. He really let her dominate him. Mm-hmm. And the same way with Joash. I think Joash was completely dominated by the priest. Mm-hmm. And after the priest died,
Jedediah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He didn't know what to do.
Jehoiada.
And he ended up killing the priest's son.
Yeah.
See, those J's will throw me for a loop every time.
There's a lot of
but as parents we can do the same thing. One of the things I always exhort moms, and you'll be one day, but the rest of us are kind of already through that mostly, is you don't take, especially with boys. You know, I read this story of the different stories through the Bible, and I watched very specifically boys at the age of 7 were weaned, and that doesn't mean weaned the way we think it does. It means weaned from the mother's control, kind of.
Yeah.
And she sort of handed him over to the father. And so there's a picture there for a young man that if he is not under the auspices of a male, he's not going to learn maleness. And it doesn't mean that the father has to even be as involved as we would like him to be. What it does mean is the mother needs to not go in and take over that role. Because what we end up, it's just like with a flower. I think about this because I'm a gardener. There's some plants that, like my asters right now, 3/4 of them are on the ground. And I want to lift them up and have something holding them up to see it. Well, if you take a flower from an early stage and you have it staked, there is a tendency that it will not have strength in its stem. And that's what we do with our children when we take an extremely strong role in their lives and we take away their ability to think, we take away their ability really to make choices. And I don't know about Jehoiada. He seems like a good man all the way around, and maybe that little boy who grew to be the king wanted to always make him happy or something, but the fact that as soon as he died, that the king goes crazy something was wrong in that rearing. And we see that all the time with the kings and how they rear their sons and what the sons become. There's a difference between keeping, you know, and as a pastor's wife, I have seen this with pastors a lot. They keep their kids under control. Well, that's real nice, but a lot of those kids are the very same ones that go wild when they grow up and leave home. They didn't give them a chance. The best time to make let kids have a chance to fail is under your auspices in a safe place. They need to fail to do right, to know what is right, to choose what is right. And oftentimes we see these kings who seem to have been raised entitled, that when they get, they don't understand how, I mean, honestly, it's like they don't understand how even God has a choice to tell them to do anything because they're the king. It's like, kind of think about this a little bit, you know, your father's dead, so you're the king, and God's still here, and who's more powerful? So, in all our relationships should be like this, an open hand. And you give people that chance and that choice to be friends, to be healthy, to be growing, but we cannot take a role we don't have. And God is the only one who has that choice. So as we look at these guys, we don't often know how they, I mean, sometimes we hardly know how they were raised at all, except for you think of these kings who married more than one woman. Where did Solomon's 1,000 wives have their kids? You ever thought about that?
No.
Well, it tells when Jehu kills all of Ahab's family, that family was not with Ahab. All of those kids were given to other men to raise.
Right.
The king did not have a hand in raising those kids. And one brother wouldn't even be with another brother. They were in different households being raised by different people.
So do they have any personal loyalty to each other? They have none.
They don't even
know
each other.
They're strangers. And so my exhortation here is we always need to be thinking of the next generation. Always. Doesn't matter what your gifts are. Doesn't matter how God uses you. However he uses you, need to be raising up someone, like Paul said, follow me as I follow Jesus. And we need to be saying to someone, follow me as I follow Jesus. Because that gives them a chance to watch, to think, to learn, to grow, to listen. And when that time comes that you're not here anymore, they will be strong and ready with strong limbs. And every kid has a point where they have to make a decision. Are they following the same way their parents did? Or are they going to follow something else? I mean, you can just see in families. One brother will go bad, and another brother will follow the Lord. So what's the difference? The difference was choice, and they chose to. And so we need to give one another that chance. We need to feel our lives are like hothouses for other people, that they have that chance to grow and become who they were meant to be. And that's one of the joys of getting older. You watch, I mean, I will never have any biological grandchildren, but I have grandchildren because the Lord is good. And although now it's kind of weird that my grandchildren's children are calling me grandma too. I'm not sure what that does. I think they think that's my name. Your name's Grandma, right?
No.
Anything else you want to add before we start? You be silent today. And I have to announce that Charlene said she didn't finish the lesson. I think that is a very first.
I didn't draw the pictures.
I didn't draw pictures.
She finished the lesson. I take that back. The drawing the pictures is if you want to, and it's review. It's review. And you may want to go back and do that review. Finish the class.
I don't draw pictures.
See the square to draw the pictures.
And then if you drew it, you wouldn't know what you're drawing anyway. Have you ever done that where you're falling asleep and you're taking notes?
Yeah, no,
I looked at my notes and go off the page.
You can't read them.
No. Mornings are a bad time for me, and I have a tendency of just drifting. Like, I should take a morning nap at about 9. It's ridiculous, but. And I sit there kind of clunking on my computer like that. But you should see some of the notes I take then. Oh, those are really fun. And Sunday morning? Keep praying, God, don't let me fall asleep. I love being here.
I can sympathize.
Okay, we'll start with 2 Kings 13. On the 23rd year of Joab, the son of Ahaziah, I'm going to say these all wrong because they're all over the place. King of Judah. Okay, so we have the king of Judah. Oh, I want to put these on the board. But this is kind of how, this is really where we learn. Oh, yeah. This doesn't have a line. And as Charlene said, she likes the charts. Well, this is kind of our charting. But we have Judah. And we have Israel. Okay, so in the 23rd year of Joash, and if you have room, you can even put the years, but Joash, the son of Ahaziah. So we're going to start with Ahaziah. And then Joash.
Jehu.
Not yet. Then we have Jehu, and his son was
Jehoahaz.
And also, he's also called
Joash.
And they kind of shift back and forth, so you have to really pay attention to which one they're talking about. Okay, so, and they were, he was king over Israel, Samaria, he reigned 17 years. He did evil in the sight of the Lord. Who did evil in the sight of the Lord?
The one who became king.
Joash. So he did. He did evil in the sight of the Lord and followed the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, with which he made Israel sin. Now, how, number one, what were the sins of Jeroboam, and how did he make Israel sin?
The golden calves.
The golden calves in two places. Yeah. How did he make Israel sin?
People worshipped the golden calves.
Because that's what he offered. That was their, all they had to worship, per se, in Israel was the golden calves. So that's how he made Israel sin. Did evil made Israel sin. So he's held accountable for that. Okay. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. He gave them continually into the hands of Hazael, king of Aram, and into the hands of Ben-Hadad, the son of Hazael. So, who were the enemies of... Have a brown. Ah, there is a brown. Let's see if it works. Okay. So, he gave them continually into the hand of
Syria or Aram.
Or Aram, okay. So, so their enemy was Aram. Why is it funny that I think she asked the question, why is it weird that Ben-Hadad was Haziel's son? Have we heard that name before?
Yeah, his grandfather was also Ben-Hadad.
Was it his grandfather, or was it the one that Haziel killed to get his position?
Yeah, he smothered Ben-Hadad. He smothered Ben-Hadad, but Ben-Hadad was sick.
Yes.
So why would he name his son after the man he killed?
To get favor with him.
Well, something.
There was a Ben-Hadad the first,
right,
and king of Aram, and then Hazael, and then a Ben-Hadad the second. So,
and Ben-Hadad the first was not anybody's father or grandfather. He was Hazael worked as
his servant.
Okay, and
right.
Came
I remember
up and
that.
To Israel.
That's right. That's right.
And Elisha wept because he knew what.
Right. Hazael was going to do. Right?
Yeah, I remember that, and then I forgot and looked at the chart. So,
well, that is the struggle with the chart, because it's on Israel's side, particularly, because Israel doesn't necessarily follow any family lines.
Right.
So, in fact, it doesn't.
They kill each other.
They kill each other and wipe them all out.
Right. That's true.
So, verse 4, then,
Jehoahaz
entreated the favor of the Lord, and the Lord listened. Now this is interesting, because what have we just seen about him? What is he just called?
He's an idolater.
He's called evil. And he's called, the idolatry, because he followed the sins of Jeroboam. But here in verse 4, it says he entreated the favor of the Lord.
Well,
he's only
maybe because he had more than one God.
Well, and maybe he's just testing waters. Who knows what he's doing?
Yeah.
But he entreated the favor of the Lord, and the Lord responded. He listened to him. So God is telling us something. We don't know exactly what. He listened to him, for God saw the oppression of Israel and how the king of Aram oppressed them. And God gave Israel a deliverer. Do we know who this deliverer is?
Jehu.
So that they escaped from under the hand of the Arameans, and the sons of Israel lived in their tents as formerly. Actually, they think that the deliverer was somebody called...
Because I didn't find it.
No, it's not in the Bible.
No.
No.
I looked everywhere, and then I decided, I'll look up some commentary. And so I did. Yeah. And they were pretty consistent with this. They think it's Adad Nerah. At the third, who says, being Israel's savior, deliver us, and then as we know this, Cyrus will be later to all of
Persia,
them as a shepherd.
Persia?
Doesn't tell us. With a name like that, that sounds pretty... Well, Persia sounds like could be right, yeah. It doesn't say. It didn't say.
No.
So he comes from... There is either Zakar of Hanath or... Adadad, Nirari, the third. One of those two.
Huh.
And
reading a telephone book here.
Yeah. In another foreign country.
Right.
It's not even an English telephone book. Okay, so there is this deliverer, and God doesn't tell us his name, so he doesn't want us to know the name. He's just telling them that he sent a deliverer. And so that they escaped from under the hand of the Arameans, and the sons of Israel lived in their tents as formerly. What is the living in their tents mean?
Peace.
Peace. They went back to peace. So verse 6, nevertheless, they did not turn away from the sins of the house of Jeroboam, which made Israel sin, but they walked in them. So they were walking in what?
Idol worship.
Idolatry.
And... the Asherah also remained standing in Samaria. So we see a pretty idolatrous country. He left left to go to Jehoaz of the army, not more than 50 horsemen and 10 chariots and 1,000 footmen, for the king of Aram had destroyed them and made them like dust at threshing. Who's he left to Jehoaz?
It sounds like verse 7. It sounds like it's the Lord.
Well, except for it's a small
the
age. So
that's true.
The deliverer?
He left to, it sounds like it. He left to Jehoaz of the army, not more than 50,000, which means they cut down the amount of the horsemen, the chariots, and the footmen. For the king of Aram had destroyed them and made them like the dust at threshing. So, confusing section. But we go forward. Verse 8. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoaz and all that he did and his might, are they not written in the book of Chronicles, which we're going to run into? Now Jehoaz slept with his fathers, and they buried him in Samaria, and Joash, his son, became king in his place. So Jehoaz had a Joash. Talk about this.
It's a J-E-H.
Yeah, he's got two names, Jehoash and Joash.
Okay. This is kind of like a nickname. Yeah. What I keep telling myself.
Well, that's the letter. Well, you know, it's...
What's a letter? So,
like I said, it's a Russian novel. Joash slept with his fathers, and they buried him in Samaria, and Joash, his son, became king in his place.
Mm. Now this was Israel, right?
Yes.
That's why I have him on that side. And you can tell because of verse 8.
And now we're going to Judah. That's where my
Well, first we're going to go to Judges. What did we learn? What did you learn in Judges that is comparative to what we just looked at here?
Well, the Lord would, the people would do evil. Mm-hmm. The Lord would raise up a deliverer, and they'd, when the people cried out, and then they would be delivered, and then they'd go for a while and do evil again.
Which this one pretty much did 5 minutes after.
Yeah.
I mean, they're getting more and more the downward spiral into evil, and you don't really see a respite very much there. So they forsook the Lord and served Baal and the Asherah, and that was back in Judges. Mm-hmm. So we can see that it hasn't changed a whole lot, and what Ahab did was just bring it forward. Mm-hmm. He didn't really initiate brand new stuff. And I have, just as a statement of something, I have a difficult time, honestly, blaming someone else for something, like to say that Jezebel is what made Ahab evil. Evil picked Jezebel because he was evil.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I mean, I think of, do you remember long ago, and I really don't want to get into politics, but I sort of am. Do you remember long ago when Nixon's first vice president was,
Was it Agnew?
Yeah.
Spiral.
Agnew. And Agnew went out there and did what he was asked to and what he was told to, and would voice the opinion of Nixon, which Nixon stood back from. Because he didn't want it to touch him, but he wanted it out there. And sometimes I think that that's what we do. We look at somebody like Ahab, and he pretty much let Jezebel take the whole thing. But she couldn't have done it if he hadn't wanted her.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, I mean, you can even think that in your own relationship and marriages. Don't let someone else put you out in front vocalizing what they should be saying, because you're the one who's going to get into trouble for it. And that's kind of what happened here with Jezebel and Ahab. But when we come to... I just already turned the page. Yes, okay, so verse 10 in Kings 13. Mm-hmm. Joash, king of Judah. So now we're over here.
So we have two of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now we have Joash, king of Judah.
So we have Joash, J.
And this, and how do we know him as different than anybody else? He's the son of Ahaziah. Joash, king of Judah. Jehoash, son of Jehoahaz, became king over Israel and Samaria and reigned 16 years. He did evil in the sight of the Lord. Okay, we have Joash did evil. There you go. I try to balance carefully. It tripped quite easily. Did evil.
Isn't it the one on the other side, though?
Pardon?
Weren't we just talking about Judah?
Yes, because it said in verse 10, Joash, king of Judah,
in the 37th,
Jehoash, the son of Jehoaz, became king over Israel. So we have both of them.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. And the reason they do that is they're trying to tell you how it fits in. So in the 37th year of Joash, king of Judah, Jehoash, son of Jehoaz, became king over Israel. And that's why we do that. He did evil in the sight. He did not turn away from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel sin. Now, why is he responsible for that?
He's the leader.
Because he's the leader, exactly. And God holds leaders very differently than he holds other people, because they are the ones responsible for standing up in front of and having people follow them. Right. So that's why a pastor becomes more accountable. That's why a teacher becomes more accountable. Which he made it, the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, which he made Israel sin, but he walked in them. So another one, he walked in them. And we're back at looking at Israel there. The rest of the acts of Joash and all he did in his might, with which he fought against Amaziah, king of Judah, are they not written in the book of Chronicles? So we suddenly jump to Amaziah, but we don't have anything about him here. And he does, God does reviews like this all the time in the Old Testament. So he's giving us a review before we even know who Amaziah is. Are they not written in the book of Chronicles of the kings of Israel? So Joash slept with his fathers. Jeroboam sat on the throne. Joash was buried in Samaria with the kings of Israel. Sometimes that's how we figure out where they are too. Where are they buried? But we have Amaziah. We haven't been told anything about yet. So verse 14, when Elisha became sick with the illness of which he was to die, Joash, so we're back on Joash again, the king of Israel came down to see him and wept over him and said, "My father, my father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen." What is he saying when he says that? What's he talking about?
Yeah.
Pardon?
I don't have what he's talking about. I can't get in that mind.
Well, no, think about chariots. What chariots right. and horsemen do?
He's talking about servant and master there. Elisha cried out to Elijah, "My father, my father." And this king is saying to Elisha, "My father, my father."
Which is a term
of submission.
Of respect and submission. Okay, but then it finishes with
the chariots of fire.
Chariots of Israel. Doesn't say fire, hun. Oh, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen. What do chariots and horsemen do?
But that was the same term that Elisha said to Elijah whenever he saw
Elijah
the chariots
going
up to heaven. And Elijah said, "If you see me going up, then you'll get the
right.
power."
Get
so,
the second.
Yeah, so it's kind of that.
I have a backward thought. I mean, it almost sounds like he wants his power.
Mm-hmm. Could well be.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any question about that. But did anybody offer it to him?
No.
No. And so he's showing his respect.
Yeah, no,
that's
but
what I
got
is he
too.
Not showing?
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about Elijah and Elisha, what was going on there? Was God involved in that?
Yes.
In fact, if
passing the mantle to Elijah.
Right. And so and so there is a whole teaching on faith in that. Mm-hmm. Is this based on faith?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have a man who respects the prophet, but he doesn't mm-hmm. have faith.
Well, in this whole section, verse 14, on everything talking about Elisha, we're told in 13, Joash died. And so this is like a parenthesis.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't say, before he died, they had this go on, but that's what it is.
Well, Elisha's dead too, I think.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah, because he dies during this whole thing. But.
So, and Elisha said to him, take a bow and arrows. We get parables all the time in these things. Mm-hmm. Take a, and so you have to sit and work your way through the parable. Take a bow and arrows. So he took his bow and arrows. And he said to the king, put your hand on the bow. Put his hand on it. And Elisha laid his hand in the king's hand. And he said, open the window toward the east. And he opened it. So he's following what he says. Then Elisha said, shoot. And he shot. And he said, the Lord's arrow of victory, even the arrow of victory over Aram. For you will defeat the Arameans at Aphek until you have destroyed them. So it sounds like it goes over and over and over again. Then he said, take the arrows. And he took them. And he said to the king of Israel, strike on the ground. And he struck it three times and stopped. Now, in this section, we don't really get what this is saying. So you have to kind of stretch into what you already know. Mm-hmm. The man of God was angry with him, and he said, you should have struck five or six times. Now, why the number five or six times?
That's just how many times he would have won the battle.
It is, which he wouldn't have known.
Right.
Except that's how many arrows he had.
Oh. Shot them all.
If he had shot them all,
it
would have been a step of faith. But he held back three. Two or three. It just says five or six, so he held back two or three, which is showing his lack of faith. He still needs to have something to protect him. So he said, then you would have struck Aram until you would have destroyed it, but now you shall strike Aram only three times. So we're going to see the fulfillment of the prophecy. Look at verse 25. Says, then Jehoash, the son of Jehoaz, took again from the hand of Ben-Hadad, the son of Haziel, the cities which he had taken in the war from the hand of Jehoaz, his father. Three times Joash defeated him and recovered the cities of Israel. But what? But they had him again. And the second year, so what that's saying is you will strike them, you will destroy them for three times, but it's not finished. And it's going to come up again. And so we continue looking at verses 20. Elisha died, and they buried him. Now the bands of Moabites would invade the land in the spring of the year. So they kind of see this as something that happens every year, isn't it? As they were burying a man, behold, they saw a marauding band, and they cast the man into the grave of Elisha. And when the man touched the bones of Elisha, now what does that mean? If he touched the bones, what?
They threw him on the same grave.
And he's kind of already been biodegraded.
Right.
Yeah, but that's what confuses me. Was Elisha in an open grave? It had to be.
Good question. Well, either that or they saw that it was a grave and they dug it, because then they didn't have to dig a great big mm-hmm. deep grave. Who knows? God obviously is not telling us, so evidently he's just saying, don't worry about it.
Well, most of the graves were like caves, right?
Could be.
So it could have
tossed that could be.
Yeah.
So he said, the bones of Elisha, he revived and stood up on his feet. So what's that all about?
I don't know, but it was scared him to death, I think.
Yeah.
The other thing, getting back to the graves, whenever you go over to Israel for I don't know how many years, the graves are not in the ground unless they're in crypts or something like that. and they're you can see the whole cemetery, like outside of Jerusalem, and it's all up above the ground. It's all rocks. It's cement things that are built above the ground, and then instead of flowers on the graves, they put rocks.
Oh, yeah, I remember that story.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just the way that they've done it for who knows how long.
Uniquely their own.
Yeah.
Well, I know up in places like Alaska, you can't bury people in the winter.
Right.
So they have their own system. And down in New Orleans, the water table is so high that they can't bury anybody in the ground. So they do it above the ground, too, for the same kind of reason. So there's just a...
Yeah. It may just be a tradition, too, because if you ever watch Schindler's List, at the end of the movie, after he died, all the Jews he saved came, and they each had a stone and put on top of his grave.
Right, and that's what I was saying. They do it instead of flowers, but they bury them above the ground, everybody. So,
I think I've read somewhere where they put their bones in the tomb, and they're out, and then they put them in the estuary, is that what you call it? The box, after a time. I don't know.
It may be because, you know, like with the Indians and stuff, the reason they burn their bodies and then they do something with it is that the flesh is all gone. Mm-hmm. And a lot of cultures do that. And sometimes they just leave them out there that the birds eat them, which sounds totally gross to me, but that's not my culture. So, yeah.
In Venezuela, that's what they did. They only had a limited amount of cemetery.
Right.
And so after a certain time, they would dig up the bones, and then they had a huge cement-covered hole, and the bones would all be thrown into that. So, like on the Day of the Dead, when they worshipped, they would put candles all around, all on top. The whole thing would be a fire with candles, because they had mixed all the bones up. But then they reburied. They could use the cemetery again for new burials.
Right.
Just, you know, it's just I wonder how we haven't run out of space for burying people for that kind of very reason. We don't. We're talking thousands of years.
But that's why I think we see more cremations than we used to, too.
Right. Yeah, that's generally the route I want to go for a lot of reasons. I don't want to take up space. I'm gone, and it costs. My family would have to pay huge amounts of money. So,
I will be cremated as the last one in my family plot. There's only space for
so many people. Yeah, there you go. But we know where you are, and it isn't there.
Yeah, we're not buried with them.
Well, mine's spread all over the place, so it wouldn't make any difference.
Well, we'll take a little ash here and a little ash.
Yeah. I could go back to have them take me back to St. Louis where Mom is, because she died when she was visiting her mom. And then we could go back to... All right, so he revived and stood up, and yes, you can imagine what they thought. I mean, they knew what happened, obviously, because we have it here today. But there were the bones, and now this other guy's alive.
And that's all it says about.
Yeah, they don't say anything about the
reality. Just enough to suspenseful.
I put it on stereo.
No, we never heard about.
Had to die again.
We never heard about the people who resurrected from the dead.
All those graves that opened on
Christ's resurrection. We don't even know when Lazarus re-died.
No, right.
Because that isn't the point of the story.
No. Yeah, it was real funny because my grandson come home from work and he drives through cemeteries at night and he's been watching these spooky movies.
Preparing himself for Halloween.
So I told him this one and I said, this one's true.
And he could get you. So what is God telling us with this?
Well, that the Spirit of God was still on the bones of Elisha. So,
and the being of who he is.
Yeah.
And even though he's gone and not there, and as much
and
as...
And the power was always of God. It was
right.
Elijah didn't have that power.
Right.
No, he was bones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they didn't get it. Now Haziel, king of Aram, had oppressed Israel. So we have Haziel, the enemy, oppressed. What does that mean?
Put his thumb
like
on him.
Yeah, that's what I think of as,
yeah,
as the thumb on.
Yeah, it is. Which tells us something about the relationship. All the days of the whole
Jehoahaz,
the Lord was gracious to them and had compassion on them, on whose the them?
Israel.
And turned to them because of his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and would not destroy them or cast them from his presence. So even though he used Haziel at other times, he did not use him here to destroy them from his presence until now. So it means when this was written, they were still there. When Haziel, king of Aram, died, then Hadad, his son, became king in his place. Then Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, took again from the hand of Ben-Hadad, the son of Haziel, the cities. He took the cities which he had taken in war from the hand of Jehoaz, his father. Three times Joash defeated him and recovered the cities of Israel. So three times he did that.
Because he went to the ground three times with the arrow.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Could have gotten it all away, but he didn't. Because he had medium faith. Then Kings 14:1, in the second year of Joash, the son of Jehoaz, king of Israel, and Uzziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, became king. So there he is. He became king. And we are going to learn a lot about him. Is it him?
Yes.
No, it's the wrong one. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jehoadam of Jerusalem. He did right in the sight of the Lord. Okay, so we're going to put that, even though it's going to change quickly. Did right in the sight of the Lord, yet not like David. His father did according to all that Joash, his father, had done. So what do we know just from this about Amaziah?
He was 25, he became king, he reigned 29 years, he dealt his mother's age, and he did right in the sight of the Lord, yet not quite as right as David.
So in the comparison, he's not as right as David, but his father, David his father, but he did according to what?
All that his father Joash had done.
Was he noted for having done great things?
No. Up until Jehoiada died?
Until Jehoiada, yes. So he did it in the beginning, but in the end he ended up worshiping all the Baals too. Verse 4, only the high places were not taken away. The people still sacrificed and burned incense on high places. Verse 5, now it came about as soon as the kingdom was firmly in his hand that he killed his servants who had slain the king his father. First, who were these servants and why did they slay the king his father?
I couldn't find...
I did, but who knows if I'm ever going to find it again. What did Joash do?
Joash killed Zechariah.
Why?
The priest.
He did. And who was Zechariah the priest?
The son of
Jehoiada.
Jehoiada.
The priest.
Which was functionally like his brother. Now, why did he kill him? Because up to that point, he was a good king.
Because Zechariah had told him he was doing wrong.
And so he killed Zechariah. And then he started doing other things. And then the kings came from Aram, and they were wanting to fight him. And what did he do instead?
He gave tribute.
He gave tribute.
Didn't he intermarry about that time?
Oh, he already had. But what he did do...
He gave all the utensils
from the temple.
All the gold and silver.
So Aram would leave him alone. And then he came back, and what did his servants do?
They killed him.
They did. It says in 2 Kings 12:20, Joash, king of Judah, took all the sacred things that Jehoshaphat and Jehoram and Ahaz, his fathers, kings of Judah, had dedicated in his own sacred things, and all the gold that was found among the treasures of the house of the Lord in the king's house, and sent them to Hazael of Aram. And then he just left Jerusalem. His servants arose, made a conspiracy, and struck down Joash at the house of Milo as he was going down to Silla.
Oh, there it is.
Now, did God ever say that was wrong? Would it have been wrong?
Well, he desecrated the temple.
But they took matters into their own hands, didn't they? God didn't tell them to do this. But God also didn't. He knew their hearts, too. So they got away with it for a while, but when the son became king, he went and looked for him, and
he killed them.
And he had several things that were pretty primary in his reign. First, that he did kill the servants of his father, who killed his father. And then two other things stood out as we look at verse 6, Second Kings 14. But the sons of the slayers he did not put to death. Now that's a good thing, right?
It followed Moses' command.
So as far as he's doing, he thinks he's doing what is right. He is avenging his father, but he's not avenging the sons. According to what was written in the book of the law, Moses says, the Lord commanded, saying, the fathers shall not put to death for the sons, nor the sons to be put to death for the fathers, but each shall be put to death for his own sin. And then he killed off Edom. What is that first word in verse 7? I can't.
He killed of Edom
in the Valley of Salt 10,000 and took Selah by war and named it Jachthiel to this day. Then, verse 8, Amaziah sent, by the way, it was Jachthiel before and it had been changed and it got its name back. Then Amaziah sent messengers, Jehoash, the son of Jehoaz, son of Jehu, king of Israel, saying, come, let us face each other. So he had one. In verse 7, he had a victory. Mm-hmm. Over who?
Aram.
Edom.
Or Edom.
Over Edom. He also, I didn't write it up here, he also avenged his father's death, which was kind of a personal thing more than a country thing. And then in verse 8, then Amaziah sent messengers and said, come, let us face each other. So what is he saying? Let's go to war. So we get to verse 9 and we get a parable. Joash, king of Israel, sent to Amaziah, king of Judah, saying, the thorn bush, which was in Lebanon, sent to the cedar, which was in Lebanon. So which is stronger?
Cedar.
Thorn bush doesn't have a whole lot to give. Give your daughter to my son in marriage. But there passed by a wild beast that was in Lebanon. So we have a thorn bush, a cedar, and a wild beast. And trampled the thorn bush. Well, there you go. You have indeed defeated Edom, and your heart has become proud. Enjoy your glory and stay at home, for why should you provoke trouble? So that you, even you, would fall, and Judah with you. That is a very wise statement. And it's also a prophecy. He's just telling him, stay home, we're not going to bother you. But you start pushing, you're going to be bothered. And by the way, you're that thorn bush that just got trampled. Amaziah did not listen to this, though, verse 11. So Joash, king of Israel, went up, and he and Amaziah, king of Judah, faced each other at Beth Shemesh, which belongs to Judah. Judah was defeated by Israel, and they fled each to his tent. So he lost. Israel. But not only did he lose, what happened to him?
He was taken.
So verse 13, then Jehoash, king of Israel, captured Amaziah, king of Judah, the son of Jehoash, son of Ahaziah, at Beth Shemesh, and came to Israel. Okay, so he not only captured the king, he tore down what?
The gates.
He tore down one of the gates.
Oh, tore down the wall
of Jerusalem.
And then
from
tore,
the one
then
gate to the corner.
Then tore down the gate from Ephraim to the corner gate of 400 cubits. And
he took all the gold and silver. So they made more gold and silver utensils and all of that.
And he got them from the king's house, too. So he took everything that was left, and not only everything that was left, but what else?
Hostages.
Hostages, which are what?
Slaves, servants.
Probably from Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go. And he had been prophesied, just stay home, enjoy yourself, enjoy your situation, back off, we're brothers. He didn't say that, but he's kind of saying that. But he didn't. So his manhood was questioned. Verse 15, now the rest of the acts of Jehoash, which he did, and he might, and how he fought with Amaziah, king of Israel, are they not already written in the book of Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? So Jehoash slept with his fathers and was buried in Samaria with the kings of Israel, and Jeroboam, his son, became king in his place. So right now, where is all the wealth of the temple?
Israel?
It's in Israel. Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, lived 15 years after the death of Joash, son of Jehoahaz, king of Israel. Now the rest of the acts of Amaziah, are they not written in the book of Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? 19. They conspired against him in Jerusalem. Suddenly we have like a new picture. Who are they that conspired?
That's what I was trying to figure out. I don't think I made it.
I think it's very simple, those who were in Jerusalem, because what did Amaziah's mouthiness cause?
Them to be defeated.
Defeat, they came in all the way into Jerusalem,
tore down the walls, yeah.
Took all the gold and utensils and everything else from the temple, which would not have happened had not Amaziah had to prove his manhood. You know, got a little filled up with his
pride.
His pride with Edom, which God had told him to do.
Well,
but he didn't tell him this one.
Well, and he got in rather easily, really.
Yes.
Whenever you look at the map, it's only one gate that he tore down, a 400 cubits long. There were plenty of other gates, but he went from there. It actually wasn't the most direct route to the temple, but it was the most direct route from where he invaded them. And so he rather easily went in and took the stuff.
So he pretty much thought he could do anything, didn't he? God was on his side. We kind of forget if God is on our side and he doesn't tell us to do something, he has no obligation to save us. But he still kept it within range. All right, so they conspired against him, and I think it's just the people of Jerusalem, Grace.
Yeah. That's what I wrote down.
Yeah.
And he fled to Lachish, but they sent after him to Lachish, and they killed him there. So he died anyway, didn't he?
He did live 15 years longer than the Jehoash, but he eventually was killed.
But he was still, by the way, in custody.
Yes.
Then they brought him on horses, and he was buried in Jerusalem with his fathers in the city of David. But what was he not buried? Where was he not?
He wasn't buried in the tomb of David.
He wasn't buried in the tomb of the kings, and he wasn't, and he didn't have a fire for him. So he did not have honor. Of course, they wouldn't do that. They're the ones who went out and killed him. All the people of Judah took Azariah, who was 16 years old, and made him king in the place of his father Amaziah. So now we have Azariah. He built Elath and restored it to Judah after the kings slept with his fathers. Remember what Elath is? If you do, you amaze me. I looked it up. Solomon built his ships in Elath, which was the same place, in 1 Kings 9:26. But this is where the ships were built, in 1 Kings 9:26.
On the shore of the Red Sea.
Right.
In the land of Edom.
Right. In 2 Kings 16:6, Rezin, king of Aram, recovered Elath and cleared it of Judeans. So when he goes back into Elath, there are no Judeans there. But he's restoring it to Judah because he thinks it belongs to them. Okay.
Well, and the other thing, in verse 21, Azariah is also called Uzziah in the margins.
Right.
And we see Uzziah in Isaiah, the book of Isaiah, verse 6:1.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
So start paying attention to these names. It doesn't say it here. Where did you get it? I know it says it, but where did you get it?
Whenever they said Uzziah in the side margin, I thought, I remembered 6:1, where he talks about, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord.
Right.
And that's his vision.
Right.
So, one of those bits of trivia that you wish would leave your brain, but they don't.
No, no, actually, it's kind of important. So, but if you look on your maps that you've been given, your historical things, they have Uzziah down there as part of Azariah.
On the map also, they have Elath way over here, below the Dead Sea. So I don't know what's below there.
You got desert. The desert, the wilderness of Zin.
Yeah.
Or Sin, depending on which version you read. And you have, can you see Edom? And Moab?
Yeah, it's not Edom, but that's all. And then Jokthiel, or whatever.
Yeah.
They're right on the line.
Bigger map.
Right, it goes all the way down.
Arrow going past them.
Right, it goes all the way down. And like it's the route that they took coming up from Egypt. It goes all the way down to Sinai. Down to Sinai.
You're going to hit the canal pretty soon.
And the Red Sea.
The Red Sea and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But that's not in our book, so they didn't put it in there. Chronicles 25 is all about who?
Amaziah.
And he reigned 29 years. I don't know how much of it you can say he reigned 29 years, since he really wasn't there a lot of the time, because he was in captivity in Jerusalem. And his mother's name, we have her name, Jehoiada of Jerusalem. And I don't know why we get that. That's the only two places it says it in the whole Bible. So maybe that's to make the difference between him and another Amaziah. He did right in the sight of the Lord, yet not with his whole heart. So we have a plus next to his name, but just not completely. Now it came about as soon as the kingdom was firmly grasped that he killed his servants who had slain his fathers. So we've seen that. However, he did not put their children to death, but as it is written in the law of the book of Moses, the Lord commanded, saying, "Father shall not put to death their sons, nor sons for put to death their fathers, but each shall be put to death for their own sins." Anything new added there? We also saw the reason. I put that in the wrong place. In 2 Chronicles 24, 22 through 27 is where we learn why Joash was killed. Anyway, all right, so verse 5 of Chronicles 25. Moreover, Amaziah assembled Judah and appointed them according to their fathers' households under commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds throughout Judea, and Benjamin, and he took a census of those from 20 years up, years old and upward, and found them to be 300,000 choice men, able to go to war and handle spear and shield. Did God told him to do this? Okay. Then verse 6, he hired also 100,000 valiant warriors out of Israel for 100 talents of silver. And a man of God came to him saying, O king, do not let the army of Israel go with you. Now, why is that logical that you wouldn't have the army of Israel go with you?
Because Israel was not following the Lord at that time.
Not to mention, who's he going to fight?
Israel.
Israel. So why would they fight their own people? If you think about it, I mean, you know, you might know your brothers on that other side. And so why are you going to join this war? So basically, even though he hired valiant warriors out of Israel, maybe part of his thinking was, if I take them away, they can't fight me. But he didn't.
Why would those 100,000 go with Judah?
Because they were paying them.
They were paid.
Just for money?
Money, yeah. money.
And they're warriors.
Traitors.
What do they have to do with themselves besides fight?
Yeah, I guess so.
Now that's the greatest honor for their own lives is they are warriors and they fight. But, verse 7, a man of God came to him saying, O king, do not let the army of Israel go with you, for the Lord is not with Israel, nor with any of the sons of Ephraim.
So true.
But if you go, do it, be strong for the battle, yet God will bring you down before the enemy, for God has power to help and to bring down. So what is the prophecy there?
You're going to fall.
You're going to fall if you do this. Amaziah said to the man of God, but what shall we do with the 100 talents which I have given the troops of Israel?
I'd be wasting my money not to go to battle.
Well, let's have it, and we'll waste more if we go to war. And the man of God answered, the Lord has much more to give you than this. Then Amaziah dismissed them. The troops which came to him from Ephraim to go home, so their anger burned against Judah. Now he's made enemies. He did do what God said, but if he had not approached them in the first place, he wouldn't have enemies. And they returned home in fierce anger. Great. You got paid, guys. Now Amaziah strengthened himself and led his people forth and went to the Valley of Salt, which was in what country?
It's still in Israel, or south.
But it
down by Edom.
By Edom.
Yeah.
And
it's at the bottom of the Dead Sea.
10,000 of the sons of Seir. Seir.
That's another word for Edom.
The sons of Judah also captured 10,000 alive and brought them to the top of the cliff and threw them. Now, who did this?
Sons of Judah.
Judah's sons captured 10,000 alive and threw them down from the top of the cliff so that they were all dashed to pieces. Lovely way of taking care of your enemies. But the troops, whom Amaziah sent back from going with him to battle, raided the cities of Judah from Samaria to Beth-horon and struck down 3,000 of them and plundered much spoil.
So much testosterone going on around me.
That's why women don't go to war.
No, it's like, let's just throw them down. Let's just kill them. Let's just...
We blow them up.
Yes.
We don't even have to see it.
Yeah.
Now, this is all sort of an enlarged picture of what we didn't see back there in Kings. Now, after Amaziah came from slaughtering the Edomites, he brought the gods of the sons of Seir and set them up as his gods.
Smart.
Now, even on a totally worldly, there isn't a god logic, why would you take the gods that failed to protect their people and make them your gods?
Yeah.
See, they look pretty. Maybe they had prettier gods. Bow down before them and burn incense to them. Then the anger of the Lord burned against Amaziah, and he sent him a prophet who said to him, why have you sought the gods of the people who have not delivered... Yeah, there it is. Who have not delivered their own people from your hand? And as he was talking with him, the king said to him, have we appointed you as a royal counselor? Stop. why should you be struck? Why should you be struck down? And then the prophet stopped and said, I know that God has a plan to destroy you, because you have done this and have not listened to my counsel. And I'm sure Amaziah just loved that. Then Amaziah, king of Judah, took counsel. Well, he just had counsel. So where did he get his counsel from?
From the gods.
From those gods that allowed their people to die. And sent to Joash, the son of Jehoaz, the son of Jehu, the king of Israel, saying, come, let us face each other. So this is more of the back. We got more of the background here.
Yeah, there's the thorn bush.
Yes. And what is he saying? What are they saying? You know, even God's prophets said, stop it. And the king said, go home, relax, you know, stay in your little place there. But Amaziah, king of Judah, took counsel and sent to Joash, the son of Jehoaz, the son of Jehu, the king of Israel, saying, come, let us face each other. Joash, the king of Israel, sent to Amaziah, the king of Judah, saying, the thorn bush which was in Lebanon sent to the cedar which was in Lebanon, saying, give your daughter to my son in marriage. But there passed a wild beast that was in Lebanon and trampled the thorn bush. And you said, behold, you have defeated Edom, and your heart has become proud. Now stay at home, for why should you provoke trouble so that even you would fall and Judah with you? Plain speak. Set God straight. There it is. But Amaziah would not listen. So the death of several of these kings is they would not listen. Why would he not? Why did he not listen?
Because it was from God.
Because of pride.
Because of his pride, and it was from God, and he wasn't going to listen to God.
Because they had sought the gods of Edom.
God is supposed to be on his side, and he's not on his side. And again, an entitled man or a proud man, he thinks God owes it to him, and God's not following his plan. That he might deliver them into the hand of Joash, because they had sought the gods of Edom. And Joash, the king of Israel, went up, and he and Amaziah of Judea, faced each other at Beth Shemesh, which belonged to Judah. Judah was defeated by Israel, and they fled each to his tent. Then Joash, king of Israel, captured Amaziah, king of Judah, son of Joash, son of Jehoaz, at Beth Shemesh, and brought him back to Jerusalem, tore down the wall of Jerusalem from the gate of Eden. Anything else added that's new in this story? I'm not going to read the whole thing.
Well, verse 20 was... I don't remember seeing that in King's version where he says, because they had sought the gods of Edom.
No, so, I didn't either. Yeah, we were kind of guessing it. That's why I asked you who did he sought as a counselor.
Yeah.
And there it is. Excellent. And again, what I have always heard is that Chronicles is from God's perspective and Kings is from man's perspective. Samuel 2. Okay. So he took all the gold, and it says in verse 25, he lived 15 years after the death of Joash. Verse 27 is kind of key, though. From the time that Amaziah turned away from following the Lord, they conspired against him in Jerusalem, and he fled to Lachish. But they sent after him, and they killed him. And they brought home, and they buried him. Anything you want to add to that? I haven't put that on the board. We'll get it when I get up again. Chronicles 15. Now, the Spirit of God came on Azariah, the son of Oded, and he went out to meet Asa. So why is this suddenly being told us here?
Wait a minute, where are you?
We had that cross-references where they told us to look up 2 Chronicles 15 and 16.
Oh, yes.
And it's basically, it's talking about Asa of Judah, which is a king going back. But why, what was said in verse 2 of that is, he went out to meet Asa and said to him, listen to me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you when you are with him. And if you seek him, he will let you find him. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you. For many days, Israel was without the true God and without a teaching priest and without the law. And then it said then, but in their distress, they turned to the Lord God of Israel and sought him and let him find them. And so we begin to see a picture again of what it looks like when you follow God and what you don't, when you don't follow God.
And during the times that they didn't follow God, there was no peace.
No peace. Absolutely. It says in verse 8, when Asa heard these words in the prophecy which Azariah the son of Oded the prophet spoke, so this is a prophecy, he took courage and removed the abominable idols from all the land of Judah and Benjamin and from the cities which he had captured in the hill country of Ephraim. He restored the altar of the Lord which was in front of the porch of the Lord. He gathered all Judah and Benjamin and those from Ephraim, Manasseh, and Simeon who resided with them, for many defected. I think we remember talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Many defected to him from Israel when they saw that the Lord his God was with him. They were still looking for God, even though if they were in Israel. So they assembled at Jerusalem in the third month of the 15th year of Asa's reign. They sacrificed to the Lord that day 700 oxen, 7,000 sheep. From the spoil they had brought, they entered into the covenant to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, with all their heart and soul. And whoever would not seek the Lord God of Israel should be put to death, whether small or great, man or woman. Moreover, they made an oath to the Lord. Now, those are hard things to hear. They wiped out everybody who didn't seek the Lord. But what, I'm not even getting behind that slightly, but what happens to a country when they've wiped out all those who don't believe? You have an easier time controlling the country?
Well, in some ways, but it's not a true worship.
No.
It's not getting anybody to truly worship the Lord.
No.
And when a country spirals down and down into more sin.
So,
and usually it happens that they become enslaved again.
So you can't just eliminate the problem. Besides the fact, if you think about it, little children are not going to worship God right away. They don't even know who he is. So what are you going to do, kill them all the way down to birth? But I also want us to think just quietly about the thousand-year reign of Christ at the end in Revelation. You've got it where the people all going into that are all believers, but progressively you get non-believers being born into the generations, and then they have another war, and it's kind of like, oh my gosh, is war ever going to be over? Well, we're getting a picture of that here. Not until Christ's reign is set up and we're all in eternity is that going to happen. Do remember, so he goes through this whole thing. Another oath was made to the Lord with a loud voice, with shouting and trumpets and horns, and all Judah rejoiced concerning the oath, for they had sworn with their whole hearts and sought him earnestly, and he let them find him, so the Lord gave them rest on every side. He also removed, verse 16, Micah, the mother of King Asa, from the position of queen mother, because she had made a horrid image, I like that, a horrid image as an Asherah, and Asa cut it down, her horrid image, and crushed it and burned it in the brook of Kindron. But the high places were not removed from Israel. Nevertheless, Asa's heart was blameless in his days. I almost think that there is this division, when you think about it. The kings can wipe out the high places, but they're never totally wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
People build them right back up again.
So the king can take the stand that that Judah is for God, but the people can still do what's in their own minds. And we have to remember that anywhere. Even if the direction is the correct direction, people will still make their own choices. And I think that's what the picture of the high place is here. Even if they are torn down, the king can tear them down, but they're going to come pop them back up. So they can't really be torn down until the heart of the people changes.
Mm-hmm. And verse 18.
Of which chapter?
Of Chronicles 15.
Okay.
He said he brought into the house of God the dedicated things of his father and his own dedicated things. Whereas that he's returning them from where they, or is it?
Well, remember, we're jumping people here. This is Asa.
That goes back in history several
generations.
Okay,
this was before they were captured.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'd have to think about that for quite a while before we answer that one. There was no more war until the 35th year of Asa's reign. Now, what happens then? In the 36th year of Asa's reign, Baasha, king of Israel, came up against Judah and fortified Ramah. I don't really know why she's having us do this in the middle of our other story, but there are similarities. And Asa brought out the silver and the gold from the treasuries of the house of the Lord and the king's house and sent them to Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, who lived in Damascus, saying, "Let there be a treaty between you and me, as between my father and your father. Behold, I have sent you silver and gold. Go break with your treaty with Baasha, king of Israel, so that he will withdraw from me." And then what happens?
Ben-Hadad listened to King Asa and set the commanders against his armies against Israel and conquered them.
So verse 7, Hanan, the seer, came to Asa.
Yeah. But there again, Asa, who loved the Lord, but he was trusting in man more than God in trying to seek an alliance with the enemy.
And he even went back in his own history because his father had an alliance. So didn't that make it right? I think that's kind of the struggle that we have, whether we're talking politics here or we're talking how to fit into our culture, whatever we're thinking, we look back and say, what worked? Instead of saying, what does God want from this step? And I think that even as we think about the high places, if we're going to tear down the high places in our lives, we have to do it with this step. We can't look back and say, this is how someone else did it. Because they had to rely on the Lord themselves. And we have to rely on the Lord too. And until we do, those high places are just going to get put back up again. Whether it's in our lives or the lives of our country or our church or anything else. He says, verse 7, so we have a prophecy kind of here. Verse 8, were not the Ethiopians and the Lubim an immense army with very many chariots and horsemen, yet because you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hand. For the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth, that he may strongly support those whose hearts is completely his. You have acted foolishly in this indeed. From now on you shall surely have wars. Asa was angry with a seer and put him in prison. Here we go again. Godly, good man up to this point, doesn't like what the seer has to say, put him in prison. And he doesn't ever deal with the fact it's really God who sent the seer. As Asa oppressed some of the people at the same time, now the acts of Asa from first to last, behold, they are written in the book of Kings. Of Judah and Israel, in the 39th year of his reign, Asa became diseased. This is our diseased guy. Became diseased in his feet. His disease was severe, and yet, even in his disease, he did not seek the Lord. But the physicians. So Asa slept with his fathers, having died in the 41st year of his reign. And they buried him in his own tomb. And they did make a very great fire for him.
So this one was the feet. The other one was the bowels.
Yeah. The bowel dude never repented. Neither did Asa, I don't think. But he had been a good king to the people, and so they made a very great fire. They put him in the city of David and put his resting place filled with spices and various kinds of blends by the perfumer's art, and they made a very great fire for him. Now we go back.
The same thing's going to happen to Uzziah that we're just introduced to.
Mm-hmm. And we're going back to right now.
Yeah.
In the... So, 2 Kings 14:23. Amaziah, son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, son of Joash, king of Israel, became king of Samaria and reigned 41 years. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, did not... This is an interesting one to me. did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, which he made Israel sin. He restored the border of Israel from the entrance of Hamath as far as the Sea of Arabah. Now that's low. According to the word of the Lord, the God of Israel, which he spoke. So it was according to the word of the Lord, the God of Israel, which he spoke through his servant Jonah. So he's looking back in the history of his people. Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet, who was of Gath-Hepher. For the Lord saw the affliction of Israel, which was very bitter, for there was neither bond nor free, nor were there any helper for Israel. The Lord did not say that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash. So, tell me about this guy. Is he bad or good?
No, he did evil on the side of God because he followed the sins of Jeroboam.
Exactly. But at the same time, he also listened to the Lord and followed.
He was mighty.
So you see a confused man. So, Kim, and I think that probably your question was, I know it was in somewhere in your lesson, but the question is, can God use bad men?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, he can. He saved Israel by Jeroboam's hand, even though he was an evil king. Verse 28, now the rest of the acts of Jeroboam and all that he did and his might, how he fought and how he recovered for Israel, Damascus, and Hamath, which belonged to Judah. So he recovered for Israel, Damascus, and Hamath, which belonged to Judah, as they are not written in the book of Chronicles and the kings of Israel. Are you confused yet?
Tell me where you are again.
I have no idea.
She's at the end of 28, verse
28, chapter 14.
Second Kings 14.
Second Kings said she chopped it up into parts, so she went back, and that's correct, but it can be confusing. You go back and forth in the same story. You want to have the same story. You don't want to keep reading this stuff all over again and not put them together. But verse 29 says, and Jeroboam slept with his fathers, even with the kings of Israel, and Zechariah, his son, became king in his place. So we have two kings I haven't put up yet. We have Zechariah of
Israel.
So let's get him up here. I have missed Jeroboam, too. And then Zechariah, who is not the Zechariah, who's a prophet. And we have Zechariah is an evil king who listened to the Lord. I'm just going to put evil king. Who did some good things.
That was Jeroboam, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Not Zechariah.
So we have that. And we didn't... Not done with Amaziah yet, are we? Okay. And you had all these things about a man of God. Did you have anything you wanted to add with that? Because you had about six, seven...
Cross-references,
yeah.
It's interesting that it ends up that you, man of God, in 2 Timothy, that you, man of God, might be
pure, pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness.
But then it ends up that we, men and women of God, might be fully prepared. In 2 Timothy, what's the first?
Also the workman's
fully prepared.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, when he's not talking about a specific person like a prophet, whenever he says man of God, he means both of us.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of more mankind.
Yes.
So you, mankind of God, flee from these things and pursue these things.
Yes.
He certainly is not ever saying, the men need to do this, the women don't, right? He is saying that the women too. So flee from these things, you mankind of God, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness. Fight the good fight of faith. And I think that's very important. Take hold of eternal life to which you were called, and you made good confession in the presence of many witnesses. I charge you in the presence of God, who gives life to all things, and of Jesus Christ, who testifies the good confession before Pontius Pilate, that you keep the commandment without stain or reproach until the appearing of our Lord Jesus Christ, which he will bring about at the proper time. He who is the blessed and only sovereign, King of kings and Lord of lords, who alone possesses immortality and dwells in unapproachable light, to whom no man has seen nor can see. To him be honor and eternal dominion. Like that one? Yeah. Anything else you guys want to add from that list? Actually, that's kind of the last of what we do, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk about some of it. Let me ask you this question. What was she talking about when she was saying, Elisha received double portion from Elijah, who could do great works, and then asking about Jesus? Why was she talking about who was greater, Elijah or Elisha? And what did you come up with?
I didn't prefer the question.
I didn't either. I didn't really like it.
I said that we're not judge.
Yeah.
God is the judge.
Yeah.
How can we say that some
one is greater
than
yeah.
other
yeah.
people? That's not our position.
Yeah.
I think what she was trying to say, and I don't like the question either at all, because I don't. God takes each one of us individually, and he doesn't compare us to each other ever.
Yeah. That's what I put down.
Yeah.
The picture
we compare ourselves, we are foolish.
Yes.
I think what she was trying to do, and I don't think she did a great job of it, was that when you become a believer and you take on the Holy Spirit, you're never greater than the Master. And we aren't. We know that. But and I think she was making that analogy that Elisha was simply taking on the spirit of Elijah. And so even though he did more things...
But it was
did,
the spirit that God put in him. It
that's,
was the spirit of God.
And that's the point.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the
yeah.
point. And we all look at God on this one, not on our all the other peripheral
It's not the
things.
Person. It's God.
Well, she referred us to Matthew 17.
Right.
Where the
Transfiguration.
Yeah.
And Elijah was there. Does that make Elijah better than Elisha?
No, but what I think she was alluding to was further on where it says Elijah would come again, and Elijah must come first before the... and he says Elijah's already come through mm-hmm. John the Baptist, so... That's what I got. I don't know what she's thinking. But.
Well, and there's a lot in Scripture about the law and the prophets, again and again and again. Jesus talks about it. Elijah and Moses appear again. And yeah, there's a lot.
And Elijah represents the prophets, and the reality of it, he did go to heaven without dying.
Yeah.
So, of course, he would be the one who we would see the figurehead of in that sense. Mm-hmm. And, like you said, for those who understood Judaism, they were always trying to understand the law and the prophets and how it fit together, and that's why the book of Hebrews is written. It's a great book, but he is greater than each one of these things. He's greater than all man. He's greater than the angels. He's greater than Moses. He's greater than the prophets. Why? Because he completes them all. And so at that point, even though we look at like a Moses and an Elijah and everything else, they're a moot point. They're simply representative of history and the people who have gone before. And it all goes great once Christ comes. It's done. And so that is, to me, what you look at. You don't compare Elijah and Elisha. Go ahead.
And sometimes, for the Jews, I think that to get the analogy that Elijah is John the Baptist. Somehow, in their understanding of history, that is an important comparison.
Because he's the voice.
The voice of the Lord preparing the way, the forerunner.
But he's still only the greatest of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Of the old, he's not,
no.
He says he's never, because he never came to a point of salvation and that in the sense of the Holy Spirit coming and abiding with him. That happens after Acts 2, and it doesn't happen before then. And so, again, this is the old. He's bringing the old to a completion.
Yeah.
And the old is crying out, look at everything that's happened, everything that's done, but look towards Christ.
Right.
And Jesus, and God the Father says, this is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased as the Holy Spirit comes and rests on him. So for a Jew, this is history fulfilled. Everything is fulfilled there if they would pay attention. And we see how faithful they are to do that, which is not much.
But isn't it interesting, too, that Elijah doubted after his great victory, he doubted, and John the Baptist in prison, the doubts came.
And he said, are you really the Christ? Are you the one we're waiting for?
So it shows that they're just men. They've been used greatly, but they're just men.
And man has pressure on him that's huge. It's unbelievable. I mean, here he was about to die. And I don't think I'm supposed to die. I think we're like going into a big kingdom, aren't we? What's going on here? And again, they did not understand. They did not understand what Christ was doing. They did not understand the Father's concept of ministry. They did not understand, it's not done yet, guys. You did a great thing, and you announced Jesus coming and everything else, but it's not done. Because he's got to die, and you're not even going to be here to see it. And after he dies, it's going to be thousands of years before the end comes. Because I have children to find in all nations in the world, and to draw them to myself. And if they seek me, they will find me. I will let them find me. I like that one.
Yeah.
I will let them find me. So we can either close class here, or we can go back and look at some of those verses. What do you want to do?
Some of the, which ones? Like the man of God verses?
Yeah. Nobody's making any decisions here. How about if we just talk about what we've gone through in this class? What have you learned in this last 5 weeks?
That there's a lot of kings that are in the same names and you get confused terribly.
And history repeats itself, doesn't it?
Well, the section of Judges sure let us know that, didn't it? It was like reading right up there with what we were going through with the kings.
Well, and this day and age that we live in, people doing what's right in their own eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think too, the kings, if they can pay money to somebody, that they'll be there after, or they'll come along socky.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah. It worked then, and it doesn't work
and
today.
It doesn't work now.
don't you think it's interesting how Joash followed the Lord, loved the Lord, did everything he was supposed to as long as Jehoiada was alive. So what makes Jehoiada stronger or able to stand than Joash?
His faith in the Lord. The strength of his faith. I don't know if Joash ever was as strong as Jehoiada in his faith.
Don't you think it's interesting, though, even in our life we'll see people seemingly stand great and all of a sudden really
fall
hard.
Apart. Yeah.
And it's hard to understand that. We have to ask ourselves that. Which am I? Am I Joash or Jehoiada? And am I going to be able to stand regardless of what is going on around me or how many people reject God or turn against God? Can I stand?
And can I finish well? Mm-hmm.
Can I finish well? That is exactly right. Can
and we say yes, but then we haven't been tested. When the test comes, then the truth comes out.
I think one of the interesting things I have observed in my short little life of 70 years is how often, like, you look at somebody and they seem godly, and then they get positioned, and for a long time they still seem godly, and there hits a point where they lose it. It's like they can't handle that
responsibility.
Well, it's authority. I think it's authority, and that's one of the reasons that God tells us to pray for our leaders, all of them. Because I do think, and I've seen it in my lifetime with people I knew, they seemed like just godly men, encouraging, going forward and everything else until they got that position of power, and all of a sudden it's like, whoa, who is this person? They took that position too seriously, or not seriously enough.
Yeah, they started thinking in that I'm the one. I. Their eyes turned inward.
I think it's a very difficult and dangerous place to be a leader. I really do. And that's why, as the body of Christ, we need to pray for our leaders. Pray that they keep their eyes on the Lord, they be humble, men and women. Because if we are not humble men and women, we are going to become arrogant and do exactly like Joash and go off in our own ways.
Yeah.
And I like that God better because, you know, he'll let me do this and this and this and this. And that God, whoa, he doesn't let me do that.
I have a daughter of a friend of ours that is I think she's a geology professor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, is she spouting evil words. And of course, to her, there is no God because we all, thousands of years ago, evolved from something.
Primordial ooze.
And she's
millions and millions and millions of years ago.
Yeah. And if you say something she don't like, she befriends you. She unfriends you immediately.
Well, evidently, you weren't really a friend anyway.
No. But she's a professor, and she's been invited to go to England for some big teaching thing, and I just shudder at what she teaches.
Well, she teaches the party line. I mean, I'm sure she's a...
Very rotten, very staunch Democrat. High up in
well, different parties, yeah, but you're right. She is probably pro...
She's very much liberal. Let's just
anti-creation, pro that whole picture.
Yeah.
But not all geology professors are.
No, it's just her. And she was raised...
They take their own choice.
Yeah, she was raised in a church.
Oh, that's why she's so very negative about it. Well, dear ones, I would suggest and encourage you to go back and go over some of this stuff. Finish the things you haven't finished. I know all of us didn't finish something.
I sure didn't finish that I would really love to be able to sit down with somebody and go through the King's List together. And
go through the King's List together?
Who whose father and whose mother and when and how evil and how unevil or, you know.
Well, you gotta keep doing it yourself so you get it first.
I am, and I have been doing it, and then I find out I better do it in pencil because
oh yeah. And the more organized you are, the more you find needs organizing.
And when you color in those hearts, it's hard to know how much to color
black. How much to color black and how much to color.
Depends on the chapter you're reading.
There you go. It's in Chronicles, which is going to make it more something, more detailed.
Yeah, from God's point of view.
Well, I'm just going to pray. Thank you, Lord, for this time. Thank you, Lord, for these sisters and their heart to seek you, to know you, to want to know you better, to love you with all their hearts. And so we ask that you make our hearts a pretty red color, that we pursue righteousness, godliness, and all that you have called us to pursue. In the name of our Jesus, amen.